5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
All right, everyone, welcome back. This is Partially Derivative. We're finally back. It's been a while. We took a break, but hopefully we'll be back and we say this every time, but
yeah, actually,
you know, it is what it is. All right. As always, I'm Noah Guzik, and I'm joined by Alec Sugar. So say hello, Alec.
Hello.
All right. So we're trying something a little different today. I thought it would be unique to do a video podcast, except Alec is in a particularly unflattering position right now. So,
okay.
He will. Well, you can't deny that. His avatar for today is Chris R. So,
and that, you know what movie it's from? I hope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Leave a comment if you know what movie it's from. I'm in my
room.
Have
you ever seen that movie? Have you ever? I know you said you didn't watch The Disaster Artist, but
no, I've never seen The Disaster Artist or The Room.
Okay, because some people think it's like a cult classic, or I mean, maybe it is, but I watched it, and it's not even a bad good movie or a good bad movie. It's not. I just think it's stupid overall, but
it is.
I think the Chris R thing is funny just because of like how it's portrayed in the movie, how the dude's name is just Chris R. So
Chris-R.
Yeah, Chris-R. It's like
you can find Alec on Twitter and Facebook at Chris-R.
Yep. I paid for the rights to have that username.
He's verified on Twitter.
Yeah. I use my life savings for that. But yeah, that movie's just it's not even a good bad movie, but the name is funny, so that's who I'll be today.
All right. So, like I said, we're going to try something different. Right now, we're on Zoom. We're using Zoom. I'm recording the video and the audio, so we'll be up on the normal platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. There's another one that the app I use puts it up on, but I forget what it is. Also, since we do have
the video, Anchor. We're going to...
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Since we do have the video, we will put it on YouTube, and then hopefully in the future we'll be able to live stream it so you can watch it live. All right, so today the topic is cryptocurrency. So this has been the big buzzword for the past couple years, especially with Bitcoin being the major cryptocurrency. So we just have an outline here. We're going to go over, obviously, the basics. It is the underlying technology behind it. It's very math-based, but we're going to try to distill it down. We're going to try to give you the basics. So we're going to talk about blockchain, decentralization, and what the point is of cryptocurrency and other things built on the blockchain. We're going to talk about the coins themselves. So obviously Bitcoin, as well as some other popular ones like Ethereum and Cardano, and of course the meme coin, Dogecoin. We're going to talk about some developments with the blockchain and cryptocurrency, like smart contracts and Chainlink. And then we're also going to talk about some wider applications of the blockchain, such as securing data like medical data, NFTs. We're going to do a short synopsis of NFTs, and there's another application of voting, and basically anything that you can apply decentralization to. So yeah, let's start right into it. So the blockchain. Basically, this is what enables all of these coins and these applications. The blockchain is literally a chain, and like I said, it's very heavily based on math, because cryptocurrency is called cryptocurrency because it uses cryptography, which is a math, which uses math, a lot of math. So do you want to go ahead and give your description of blockchain? So I think what we're going to do is we're going to give both of our descriptions of blockchain, like how we think of it, and then hopefully the viewers and listeners will be able to pick one and hopefully get a grasp of it for themselves. So if you want to go ahead and give your description of the blockchain.
Well, I mean, I just have a very, like, I guess, base level understanding of most of the stuff we're going to talk about today, just from like stuff I've read online or, you know, from different sources. But to me, like the, like blockchain, I guess, would be the overlying technology that is fueling, you know, Bitcoin and, say Ethereum and all these different Cardano, all these different currencies or I guess protocols or, you know, because like the Ethereum blockchain, people usually say, you know, I'm going to buy Ethereum and they mean Ether. But I think some people don't realize that like Ethereum by itself is like this was way more massive than just, you know, Ether, the token. So there's a lot more, you know, like smart contracts that can be done on Ethereum, on the blockchain, NFTs. So I guess like if you look at Bitcoin, it's the first kind of technology like this to come out. But I don't think it's the most valuable asset in the space. I think it just kind of has that name recognition. And so, and it's because, you know, before that there was no blockchain technology that was out on the internet anywhere. So I think that's what makes it valuable and it's limited supply. But to like the definition of blockchain, I think maybe you could give that, but to me, you know, it's just, I think we talked about earlier, you have, I think you said it's called hashes, like functions that you solve. And that's how miners can verify the blockchain through proof of work and, or verify like a block. And from my understanding, it's, you know, you have these blocks that are put together by having, what is it? The hash of the last block in the top line of the next block. So you can verify which, like that this one does come after this one. And I believe it's called, the Bitcoin ledger is the history of all those transactions. So, I'm not sure. I don't have a deep understanding of that aspect. But I do know that like the other, like Ethereum, Cardano, all that stuff that's coming after is kind of building off of what the idea of Bitcoin brought to the table for people. So once that came out, people saw that. I think that it's getting better and better. But like, I think blockchain is kind of like that base idea that you have all these other cryptocurrencies like being built off of.
Yeah. So blockchain is basically what these decentralized, whether they be currencies or applications or anything are based off of. You are correct. You said, you know, it's a decentralized ledger. So I actually pulled up a quick article. So I'm just going to read like their definition of the blockchain. So blockchain is sometimes referred to as distributed ledger technology, and it makes the history of any digital asset unalterable and transparent through the use of decentralization and cryptographic hashing. So basically, as it says, decentralization is the key. There is not one central database. There is not one, it's not like the government or Google has a server that they keep all this information on. It's distributed through a peer-to-peer network. So that means anybody on the network has a copy of the ledger. This website gives an analogy for understanding blockchain. The analogy is a Google Doc. If anybody's ever used Google Docs, I'm sure you have. So when you create a document, you share it with the group of people. So the document is distributed because it's decentralized and it gives everyone access to the document at the same time. So no one is locked out awaiting changes from another party while all modifications to the doc are being recorded in real time, making changes completely transparent. So blockchain is much more complicated than that because of the addition of cryptography, but it's just a quick analogy to get the basic understanding. So just also on this website is builtin.com/blockchain. So anybody can go to this if they want to read more. So an explanation, a quick overview of blockchain is it's a database that stores encrypted blocks of data and then chains them together to form a chronological single source of truth for the data. So it's all about storing data in a decentralized way. We're going to use the word decentralized a lot because that's what blockchain is all about. So these digital assets, they can be, you know, information stored digitally. They can be these coins or these tokens. These assets are distributed instead of copied or transferred. So again, they're distributed amongst the peers on the network. The asset itself is also decentralized. So it allows for full-time access and transparency to the public. So anybody can access it at any time. There's also, it's a transparent ledger of changes, preserves integrity of the document. So when they say transparent, it's immediately broadcast to all the peers on the network. Again, it's not just one centralized authority that can change whatever they want. And then the inherent security measures of the blockchain and the public ledger make it a prime technology for almost every single sector. So anything that you need to keep secure, that you need to keep verifiable to the public can stand to benefit from the use of the blockchain. So does that, I think that's a pretty good overview. So these blocks, again, it's all about data. It's all about cryptography. So every chain consists of multiple blocks, and then each block has its three basic elements. So there's the data, whether it be transactions for cryptocurrency, whether it be, you know, personal data like medical data, whether it be cryptographic data. So there's the data. There's a 32-bit whole number called a nonce. And the nonce is randomly generated when a block is created, which then generates a block header hash. So the nonce is just a randomly generated number that cannot be easily replicated. Like there's no known function to get a nonce from an input. And then of course there's the hash, which is again using it would be a 256-bit number, which uses SHA-256 hashing, which is just a cryptographic algorithm that spits out a 256-bit number. And this number is wedded to the nonce, which is the random number. And it starts with a large number of zeros. So this is how mining works. Do you have anything else to add to that?
No, I think that was pretty... I covered a lot of it.
So basically the nonce is key to the cryptographic hash. The data in the block is considered signed and forever tied to the nonce and hash unless it is mined. So we can go into the next section on this website is actually miners. So the way, actually let's talk about the applications of Bitcoin and why Bitcoin exists. So what do you think made Bitcoin necessary?
Do you have a strong opinion on Bitcoin? Because I feel like I have like a an opinion on it, but I'm sure you could prove me wrong if you knew a lot about it.
I mean, not necessarily Bitcoin in particular.
Okay, because I mean to say that, like, I personally don't think that what Bitcoin is now, like, I think if it was actually valued how it should be against, say, things like Cardano or Ethereum, that it's not as valuable. Like, say, like, Ethereum, just what it can do versus what Bitcoin can do, or even Cardano versus what Cardano says it'll be able to do versus what even Ethereum can do, and then translate that down to, like, how far it is past Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin to me, if you, like, 10 years ago, I think Bitcoin's a big deal. Now, I think it's going to get flipped by Ethereum's market cap probably within a few years. It might get flipped in market cap, like, you know, for a few days or weeks, you know, way sooner than that. But, like, Bitcoin, I think it's important because, like you said, it's the first application of blockchain that people were made aware of, right? Or it's just the first that there was. So now, I mean, I think it's a proof that you can have, like, a trustless system where there's no centralized figure, like a government, let's say. And, you know, there's just the proof is, to me, like, the daily volume of the Bitcoin that's traded. The fact that, you know, a hacker can't go in and, I mean, I'm sure there are ways to hack, but I don't know what it would be called, but it would not be a hack of the network. It would be a hack of the actual users. So I would have to, you know, email you and get information from you that would enable me to actually get into, like, say, your account and get your keys.
So, yeah.
So I think the privacy, the security, everything that Bitcoin does is important, but I think it's been iterated on. Like, if you, I guess this is the easiest way for me to put it, is it's like basically if you took the original iPhone and it was still worth more than, say, like, an iPhone 12 today, right? Like, an original boxed iPhone probably sells more than a new iPhone solely because it's, like, it's an artifact. Not an artifact, but it's, you know, it's a piece of history at this point. It's right. Not selling on its actual value. I think, you know, an iPhone 12 is a million times more powerful and computational, I don't know what you'd say, computational ability than a original iPhone is. Just like Bitcoin is not the best of the best anymore, but I believe it's still being traded at such a high valuation because of, you know, I think what it comes down to
is
limited.
There's a lot of factors. There's a lot of factors influencing the price of Bitcoin for sure.
There are, and I just, you know, I think it's the fact the price movement we've seen in the past. I think people are applying and just it keeps it afloat. I don't know. I'm not very knowledgeable about that, but
right, that's fine. I mean, it's a lot of.
I think that, it, you know, because of what people have seen in the past, it's easy to say, okay, well, if Bitcoin's at $60,000 now, another 10x would be $600,000, and it's done 10x's before. So let me just go ahead and throw in, you know, I believe one Bitcoin.
I believe the I forget who it was, but like the current main developer maybe of Bitcoin said, or someone related to Bitcoin said, they expect it to, like, hit $1 million or something this year.
I would say by
it's 20, not out of the realm of possibility.
Mid-2030s, I think Bitcoin hits $1 million if it keeps up with the same, like, if it has the same popularity as it does now. Or I don't even
right. mean to say popularity. I mean, but that's the relevance. Negative downside. I think relevance. That's the that's the downside to cryptocurrencies is they're very volatile.
Well, because think about it. I mean, you like, we're having this conversation about how Bitcoin's valuable because of, you know, I'm trying to say it's because it's like the iPhone thing, but I could be wrong. You know, maybe it still does have value and I'm just not educated enough to know, but we could be talking about this now, and then in a year, Ethereum flips Bitcoin's market cap. Every coin is now, or token is now, you know, correlated with Ethereum's price and not Bitcoin's price anymore. And now we're moving into the age of, like, you know, the technology does matter more than just the limited supply of Bitcoin, right? Because Ethereum has like 120, 115 million coins in circulation, and it's going to be burned for a period, actually, because they're moving to proof of stake and whatnot. So that'll have a limited supply, but Bitcoin only has 21 million. So, I mean, there's 7 billion people in the world. To get, you know, one of 21 million coins, and not even 21 million because there's a bunch of lost ones. So if we move away from, like, that being the value basis, is that, you know, it's scarce, I guess, and you move to, like, the technology is really good, then I think we could see Ethereum flip the market cap and then have things correlate with Ethereum and not Bitcoin. But then at the same time, I could also see where Bitcoin stays dominant for whatever reason, and it ends up hitting $1 million, and, you know, I'm a strong believer that if you pick a cryptocurrency that's in, like, the top 10 of market cap, or you pick something that just has good fundamentals, the crypto space in general should have a lot more money come into it in the next few years. So, you know, having the coin that you like right now, like Cardano, having it at $1, don't look at the actual price. Just look at the market cap and say, okay, if I have this many in supply and we hit this price, what will the market cap be? And you can really, like, if Bitcoin is the one that's, you know, dominant, you can say if Bitcoin were to theoretically hit, like, $10 trillion market cap, if Cardano was still at a $60 billion market cap, that just would not happen. So
yeah,
whatever percentage you think Bitcoin can move, move the market cap of your favorite coin, and that's maybe where it'll be, because things correlate with Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, we'll get into the different, like, types of coins and stuff like that, but I wanted to go back to, like Bitcoin itself was created as, like, think of it like literally digital gold, essentially, because...
No, but that's not what it was created for, though, is what I'm saying.
But I'm just saying it's just like a different... It's an alternative to fiat currencies, which are just it's backed by something other than a government.
Yeah.
So that's right now, I guess, no one knows who created it. It's just the people who created it published the white paper under the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, and nobody actually knows who that is. Do you think it's a group of people, or do you think it's a single person?
I think it's a single person.
Really? You think a single person was able... See, I think it's almost... I think it's... It almost has to be, like, multiple people. I don't know if somebody... Unless they're, like, really smart. But the original white paper was only nine pages, and now all these new cryptocurrencies have, like... 100+ pages of their white papers. So a white paper is just a description, a paper written by the original developers of the coin or the blockchain. And it's just a description of why they created it and how it works, basically.
I tend to think it could just be a single person, but I mean, maybe not, you know, I don't see why.
Yeah, I mean, nobody knows. It is kind of weird. Like, why do you think, okay, here's another question. Why do you think they chose to remain anonymous?
Because the entire idea behind it was like a decentralized thing. And if you don't have a figurehead for it, I think it's more, I don't know how you put it. Like have you ever heard someone's voice or listen to a song, but then you watch the music video or you see a picture of that voice actor and you're like, huh, that's not what I thought they looked like. And it kind of taints your image of whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think the person who made it or the group is like, okay, if we have a centralized figure, that might make people judge this crypto, their this idea against who I am or what we are or where we're from or something like that. Whereas that's not what it's about. It's about having this system that's for, like, by the people. It's verified by people on proof of work.
That's actually that makes sense.
I don't know though. That could be it, or it could just be because they're like, I don't want to be famous. I don't know. It could be like shallow like that.
Yeah. So, what was I going to go to next? So Bitcoin is obviously the biggest coin right now. It's essentially like digital gold, as in it doesn't, the only thing backing it is the value that people attribute to it. It doesn't have any inherent value. So thinking, going along the gold analogy, I'm sure people have heard of the process of mining. So mining in this sense does not use, it's not physical mining with like pickaxes and stuff, but it's actually, it's computer mining. So you use computers to mine. So this actually has a very good, this website actually has a very good description of mining. So when I stated before that each block has a nonce and a hash, this website says that miners create new blocks on the chain through a process called mining. In a blockchain, every block has its own unique nonce and hash, but also references the hash of the previous block in the chain. So mining a block isn't easy, especially on large chains. So Bitcoin, this is proof of work. Bitcoin uses proof of work. So miners use special software to solve the incredibly complex math problem of finding a nonce that generates an accepted hash. So because the nonce is only 32 bits and the hash is 256 bits, there are roughly 4 billion possible nonce hash combinations that must be mined before the right one is found. When that happens, miners are said to have found the golden nonce and their block is added to the chain. So this is how proof of work and mining works. There's a nonce and a hash, and you basically get a lot of CPU power and you have to compute this nonce hash combination, or I'm sorry, finding that you compute the nonce that generates the hash. So this comes into, like you mentioned earlier, the concept of, is it possible to hack the network? So making a change to any block earlier in the chain requires not remining, not just the block with the change, but all of the blocks that come after. This is why it's extremely difficult to manipulate blockchain technology. It can be thought of as safety in math, since finding golden nonces requires an enormous amount of time and computing power. So this is the concept of proof of work, which basically...
And I think too, like, doing that would be not cost effective at all. Like, you would probably spend more money on computing power than you would be making.
Essentially, the only way, and this was written in the Bitcoin white paper, the way that you would attack the network is to have 51% of the computing power of the network. So basically, you would have to pool 51% of the computing power of the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain network, which would allow you to create fake blocks faster, because you have 51% of the computing power, you can create blocks faster than the rest of the 49% of the computing power of the network.
Do you think it's possible that, I mean, okay, so mining is becoming really, isn't it becoming really like energy intensive?
Yes. So because it's becoming energy intensive because the math involved in generating the nonce is getting harder and harder. So each time a block is added to the chain, the computational power to create the next block in the chain increases. I believe it increases exponentially.
So isn't Bitcoin kind of making itself more centralized, because like you're gonna have to have higher and higher and higher capital to be able to actually mine this stuff. So Bitcoin went from being mined by regular people with regular computers, right, to now you have the mining rigs and companies that specifically yes. mine. I mean, so aren't we sort of moving? I'd love to see what the percentage of, I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say, like the percentage of the biggest pools.
So I actually looked that up.
Because the dominance has to be going up for, or like the, like it right. might be 1% yeah. among 100 people, but now it's 20% here, 15% here, and you probably don't have a lot of 1%ers, right? I mean, like.
So guess where the largest concentration of mining pools is right now?
I bet Russia.
You'll never guess. Close.
Ukraine.
No, not geographically, but.
Oh, close. China.
Yes, China. So China contains 76%. This is according to buybitcoinworldwide.com. China contains 76% of the 20 major, I'm sorry, of the mining power of the network. The United States contains 3%.
But regardless of like a country's overall power, like is there anything that shows the individual miners yes. if there's like a certain percentage? Yes.
So the biggest pools, so a pool is just, it's just, hold on one second. They're mining pools are just groups of cooperating miners who agree to share block rewards in proportion to their contributed mining hash. So a mining pool is still, it's actually a very interesting concept. They're cooperating, but it's still, you get the reward based on your contribution.
Okay.
So they smooth out rewards and make them more predictable, but they obviously, unfortunately, concentrate power to the mining pool's owner. Miners can choose to redirect their hashing power to a different mining pool at any time. So the biggest mining pools right now are F2 pool is in China. It mines about 19% of all blocks.
So I mean, how difficult is it for that person to then just take 51%? I mean, especially with China having...
Right. So if all of the biggest mining pools are in China, so the top four mining pools are in China. So the top four are F2 pool, Ant pool, Via BTC, and Poolin. So it goes 19% for F2 pool, Ant pool is 14%. Via BTC is 12% of all blocks, and Poolin is, again, 12% of all blocks. So that is, 33% plus 12 is 45%. So that is 50%, 57% of all blocks are mined in China. Now, these are different pools, but it's still more than 57%. So more than 51%. So if all of these pools in China pooled their computational power, they would have 51% of the computational power of the network.
I'm sure there's something we're missing, because that doesn't sound right. Like, I mean, because if you were a pool operator, right, like you say, okay, look, I'm gonna use all your computational power to do this. Like, I feel like you could scheme to, you know, take over 51%, right? I mean, it sounds like straightforward, but I'm sure there's something we're missing.
Why do Bitcoin pools not? Because I don't know the answer. I believe it would probably have something to do with, it would affect the price, because if people just, if all these mining pools in China just combine their mining power, then everybody would be like, you know, there's no point. Like the value of Bitcoin would drop.
like, it makes me think, like, if I posted this question on Reddit, there'd be some guy going, well, actually, and so I just, that's why I'm not buying that. I'm sure there's some solution to this.
So obviously the mining pools still share reward.
But they share rewards, but I mean, it seems like people, it seems like the inevitability of Bitcoin is to gravitate towards, like centralization because of this, because of
there's actually a paper. I'm just Googling right now. There's actually a paper, which I have not read, from Cornell in the computer science department, titled "Majority is Not Enough. Bitcoin Mining is Vulnerable." So the Bitcoin mining protocol is not incentive compatible. We present an attack with which colluding miners obtain a revenue larger than their fair share. This attack can have significant consequences for Bitcoin. Rational miners will prefer to join the selfish miners, and the colluding group will increase in size until it becomes a majority. At this point, the Bitcoin system ceases to be a decentralized currency.
Do you know what I just thought, though? Do you know what I just thought of, though?
What?
The incentive for them to not do that is that then they would break the whole, then the whole system would fail and all of what they're mining would become worthless.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It would affect the, if everybody else found out about it, then it would become worthless because it's no longer decentralized. So they have an incentive.
Yeah.
Obviously China, you know, their incentives are different, but.
And you know what, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking this is that will never happen, because what I'm pretty sure ends up happening is that these mining people, whoever, end up storing large amounts of Bitcoin to then dump into the market to crash the market and buy back at lower prices. And I would bet that that is more profitable than messing everything up by taking 51% and attacking the network that you're trying to make revenue off of. Like, if somebody went ahead and just, if the government, let's say, you know, like, made a bunch of shitload of money and then was just like, all right, we have this much money now. People would be like, no. And it would, like, that's what inflation is, right? I mean, like, you can't just print money. Or you can, I guess, but then it inflates.
So this website is saying, while we can see which mining pools are the largest, it's important to understand that the hash power pointed towards a mining pool isn't necessarily owned by the mining pool itself. So hash power, basically, proof of work is dependent on, again, the what's called hash power. So it uses GPUs to compute the hash. And I'm not sure why it uses GPUs over CPUs, but GPUs take up a lot of energy. They take up a lot of power. They give off a lot of heat. So these Bitcoin farms, it's basically a bunch of GPUs strung together. So Bitcoin miners can switch mining pools easily by routing their hash power to a different pool. So the market share of pools is constantly changing. So, I mean, I haven't found anything, but obviously there are circumstances where people could attack the network. But then, like you said, you know,
you're kind of biting the hand that feeds you, right? You're kind of screwing yourself. So I'm sure there's other roundabout ways that people, you know, use to make more than their fair share, right? Like I said.
All right. So that's Bitcoin. Right? So it uses proof of work. It was the original cryptocurrency. It was created in 2009 by the persons known as Satoshi Nakamoto. And you can read the white paper online. It is somewhat more math-based. It is technical. These white papers are technical. So the point that we're trying to make is that we can, you know, kind of take the technical side and distill it down for somebody who doesn't have a technical background to understand. But that's Bitcoin. It's the obviously the largest. cryptocurrency right now, it took off, you know, just in the past couple of years, it skyrocketed and it might continue to climb. We both have a little bit of Bitcoin. So let's move on to Ethereum. What is your, what are your thoughts just in general on Ethereum and its applications?
I like Ethereum a lot more than I like Bitcoin or Litecoin. I think Cardano has a lot of, like, okay, so this is where I'm going to get into, like, more of, like, speculation type stuff. Because, like, Ethereum, to me, has the first mover advantage that Bitcoin does, except for in the space of, like, let's say, like, smart contracts and the real, like, DeFi applications. I think that Cardano can do a lot of that, and it'll be able to do maybe even more. But at a certain point, I think that Ethereum is making the necessary upgrades to stay dominant in the space. I think a lot of things are built on Ethereum, like different tokens or different applications that people are already using. And a lot of things that are built off of Ethereum are blockchain agnostic, so they can be used with other tokens or applications. So I just think that the Ethereum network is already pretty massive compared to, like, you know, say, like, Cardano is the one that everyone says is going to, you know, take Ethereum's spot, the Ethereum killer, right? But I think it's more, that's like a David versus Goliath situation. And I don't know that Cardano, you know, will be able to gain the momentum to really do that. And I also don't know that, that there can't be more than one winner, right? Like, I don't think Ethereum has to be the only, like, the one winner in this scenario. I think there will be a lot of different applications that come out in the next few years. I don't think that Ethereum will stay completely dominant, but I do think it'll be the biggest, the biggest, like, smart contract and basically just, like, the biggest second layer to the internet. I don't think Cardano will take its spot. I think Cardano will have usefulness, but I definitely think Ethereum will flip Bitcoin's market cap in the next few years. And I think Ethereum will pull ahead as the most dominant in the space, but I'm not sure that it'll be seen that way just because Bitcoin, I think, will have a higher price per coin for a pretty long time. I don't know that maybe Ethereum per coin will ever pass Bitcoin just because it's completely different market supply. So I think you might have Ethereum reaching into that number one spot as far as market cap, but people will still see Bitcoin as, like, the store of value, safer kind of investment because Ethereum is used for more. It's transacted more. So I think it'll have a more volatile price maybe. And Bitcoin, I think people will hold on to more. And it'll be kind of like that gold to say, you know, a more volatile asset. So I think people will still stock up on Bitcoin, but I think Ethereum will kind of overshadow Bitcoin by a long shot. I don't know that Bitcoin gets flipped by anything other than Ethereum in the next few years, at least, but I definitely could see. I think it'll be Ethereum, Bitcoin, Chainlink, and I don't know what else will be. I think that'll be what the market caps are, though. In a few years, is Ethereum number one? I think Bitcoin will be number two. I think Chainlink will definitely be number three. And then after that, I couldn't really say. I think you'll have more of the small players. But Ethereum, I think, is being, what's the term? Slept on. I think it's being slept on by a lot of people because of, like, Bitcoin's mania. And people aren't able to understand yet. Like, I don't even fully understand Ethereum, but I know, like, when I listen to people talk about it, or I listen to really smart people, like, I don't think people realize what Ethereum will do because it's more complicated than Bitcoin. People already don't understand what Bitcoin is, but it's easy to tell them, like, look, there's 21 million Bitcoin that'll ever be mined. You know, the price is determined, you know, here's the market cap. It's a little bit straightforward, but I think that Ethereum just has so many different applications and so many different use cases that it's hard to say what the price could even go to. I think you can do more technical analysis on Bitcoin and say, Bitcoin doesn't do anything for the most part. This is how the price has moved in the past. This is how we suspect it'll move in the future. And I think that's enough for Bitcoin. You can bank on Bitcoin being over $100,000 probably by 2023. I would say $1 million by mid-2030s. But with Ethereum, I think you could see the price just go to places where you just, you know, you can't even project out yet because you don't have as many market cycles. And there's just so many different applications it could adopt. But I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm just going to backpedal a little bit and just be like, okay, what is Ethereum?
Yeah, you should probably go ahead with your what is thing, and then I'll just...
Yeah, yeah, okay. So when we say Ethereum, there's a difference between Ethereum and ETH. So Ethereum is the platform. It's the network. It's the blockchain that ETH is used on. So Ethereum, like you said, is different from Bitcoin because Ethereum is not just used. It's not just a cryptocurrency. Ethereum is the network that these other applications are built on. These, what they want to be used, what they want the network to be used for is decentralized finance. They want it to be, these decentralized applications. So,
and Ether is basically the gas that runs the network.
Right. So Ether is the coin itself. So the applications are, you know, they include decentralized finance. They have listed decentralized autonomous organizations, NFTs. You know, I'm sure some people have heard of NFTs, but the concept is the same. It's decentralized. Let me look. I'm on their website right now. So Ethereum itself and all of these blockchains or these networks that are created, like Bitcoin and Ethereum, they're all open source. So literally anybody with a technical background can go and modify them and create their own you know, coin or network, or, you know, they can fork the network. So Ethereum is open access. This is the listing on their website. Ethereum is open access to digital money and data friendly services for everyone, no matter your background or location. It's a community built technology, open source, behind the cryptocurrency Ether and thousands of applications you can use today. So banking, we just found out that Brave uses coins when you browse using Brave, which I might actually switch to soon because I like that idea. So Ethereum itself is the technology that lets you send cryptocurrency, and it powers the applications that everyone and anyone can use, and no one can take it down. And they say it's the world's programmable blockchain. It builds on Bitcoin's innovations with some big differences. Both let you use digital money without payment providers or banks, but Ethereum is programmable, so you can use it for lots of different digital assets, even Bitcoin. This also means Ethereum is for more than payments. It's a marketplace of financial services, games, etc. So, the biggest thing about Ethereum is it uses smart contracts. So if we go to ETH, so it's secured by cryptography, again, peer-to-peer. The only thing that's funny about you know, these cryptocurrencies is that you don't usually have like whole numbers of these cryptocurrencies. A lot of times you can have, you know, 0.0005. Depend, you know, I have like 0.0003 something worth of Bitcoin because I only put in, you know, $150 worth of Bitcoin. So that's just a different part. If you're going to use these cryptocurrencies in like for everyday transactions, you're not going to say like, oh, I have 5 cents. You're going to say I have 0.003 Bitcoin.
That's where I see Ethereum as being more valuable, is because, like, you've heard of USDC, right? So yeah. USDC runs on the Ethereum blockchain. I think that's what bridged the gap. That's what bridges the gap for me, as far as, like, you have 0.000 whatever, and I don't care about having 0.000 Bitcoin, because I'm not going to ever use it for transactions. I'm just going to hold it. Just like you could have, like, point whatever grams of gold or whatnot. Nobody uses gold to buy things usually, but you can get cash. There's cash that was backed by gold. So I think Ethereum, like USDC on Ethereum, that's where I see that. Like Visa announced that they're using USDC, Visa announced, I think, that they're testing the application of having USDC used on the Ethereum blockchain. So they're basically using the Ethereum blockchain for transactions because it's faster or something and cheaper.
So like USDC is called a stable coin. So its value does not change like Ethereum does. So this, I'll just read the description of ETH versus Ethereum. So ETH is the lifeblood of Ethereum. When you send ETH or use an Ethereum application, you'll pay a small fee in ETH to use the Ethereum network.
Visa would pay their fees in ETH,
yes,
for using USDC to transact. So that's the value of, you know, they're using USDC. So why does that help Ethereum ETH investors? It's because all the fees that they would have to pay for making the transactions in USDC would be in ETH, which would add value to the network. So I don't know much about all of Ethereum's other applications, but I do know that if you take USDC and how the fees are paid in ETH for that, and you extrapolate out and think about everything else that the Ethereum blockchain can do, what the network can do, and the fees for that stuff are paid in ETH, I mean, you know, I think it's endless, the possibilities.
So I'm sorry. No, you're fine. It's a conversation. I'm just reading the technical aspects. So, miners are like the record. So again, miners are also relevant to Ethereum. They're the record keepers of Ethereum. They check and prove that no one is cheating. Miners who do this work are also rewarded with small amounts of newly issued ETH. The work miners do keeps Ethereum secure and free of centralized control. ETH powers Ethereum. That's the key. ETH will become even more important with staking. So we'll get into that later. So where was I just looking at? So actually, I think what we're going to do is, because I'm not exactly sure how long we've been going, but it seems like a long time. So maybe we'll actually split this into two parts, and we'll end on why do these things have value? Why is Bitcoin worth, you know, whatever it is now, $35,000, and it was at one point it was $60,000. So why does, this is particularly, why does ETH have value, but why do any of these things have value? So this says ETH is valuable in different ways to different people. For users of Ethereum, ETH is valuable because it lets you pay transaction fees. Others see it as a digital store of value because the creation of new ETH slows down over time. More recently, ETH has become valuable to users of financial apps on Ethereum. That's because you can use ETH as collateral for crypto loans or as a payment system. It can also be seen as an investment similar to Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. So it's. I mean, I don't know if this is, I think this is a valid comparison, but it's, especially Bitcoin. Bitcoin is essentially digital gold. Like, why does gold have value? It's because people attribute value to it, and it moves, it's much more volatile. There's a lot of things that influence, you know, the value of Bitcoin. Ethereum, I think, is actually more stable because it does, again, since ETH powers Ethereum, it actually has applications, and it has value because you can use it for something other than just as a digital store of value. So it's, but the downside is it's much more volatile than, say, stocks, obviously.
So I mean, that's kind of where I get like, yeah, like Ethereum, you look at Ethereum and it's like, it has value. And I look at Bitcoin and I'm going to continue to buy Bitcoin, but it's only because I've been wrong in the past by not investing at certain times when the price was very low, because I was thinking exactly what we're thinking now is it doesn't really do as much as Ethereum, but I'm definitely having more Ethereum in my portfolio, but I'm going to keep Bitcoin because I know, I think that it's going to go somewhere. I don't think it has as much room to grow as, say, Ethereum right now, or any of these other DeFi applications. I think DeFi is the future of finance, and that's what I believe. I don't think Bitcoin has a place in that, but I think it does have that kind of gold value. You know, it has the, you know, we value gold this way. I guess we value Bitcoin this way. But, you know, like oil, for instance, like, I don't know what the market cap is on oil.
Well, oil, I think is different because it's a commodity. I mean, yeah. Okay. So oil is more
of a commodity.
Okay. Oil is more applicable to be compared to Ethereum, and gold is like Bitcoin. That's what I would say. I agree with you. Because Ethereum is used for something. Oil is used for something. So go ahead.
I mean, and gold is still used for things, but clearly it's not valued at its fair value, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think that's an argument. Is like right now people say, oh, Bitcoin is falling in price. You know, oh my God. But I think it's closer to its fair value now than it was at 70,000. And as long as we're hanging around the fair value of Bitcoin, I don't think there's much of an issue. I've seen some technical analysis saying, like, you know, we're right now, Bitcoin is where it's supposed to be. When it was at 70,000, it was extended pretty far.
Right. It's like any stock, you know, the market will adjust to what the actual, you know, value is of a company or the commodity. So I think, like I said, we're going to end it here. We'll actually split this into two parts. The next part next week, most likely, hopefully, it'll be posted next week. It might be recorded earlier, but
yeah,
the next part will go into other things built on the Ethereum blockchain, other coins. So there's stable coins, shit coins, and collectible tokens. We'll go into DeFi, and we'll go into NFTs and DAOs. We'll do some research on that, and we'll come back to you on that. And then we'll go into other blockchain technologies like smart contracts, Chainlink, and Oracle applications, and also the biggest meme coin right now, which is Doge. So
yeah, I think it'd be fun to kick it off with Doge, maybe.
Yeah. So you have that to look forward to next week. Like I said, this will be posted on our normal audio-only platforms as well as YouTube this time. So you can also follow Partially Derivative on Twitter. And I believe that's it. So we will see you next week, hopefully. If it's not next week, it'll be soon after that.
Soon. 6 months.
Yeah.
6 months later.
All right. So that's it. We'll catch you next week.
Next week in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to look out for part 2 of this episode next week. If you enjoyed this content, be sure to follow us on YouTube, Anchor, Spotify, or wherever you're listening.